Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Morning.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 9:01 the time. If you're scoring at home, hour number three, our final hour here today on this Thursday, May 14th, 2026 edition of Sports 56 Mornings. We're live and local broadcasting from the Family Leisure Studios. Greg Gaston, Eli Savoy, Jay Hamm with you. We'll be joined in just a moment by the head coach of the Memphis Tigers football program, Charles Huff. Family Leisure, go visit them at 2120 Witten Road. That is just north of I-40. Summer is right around the corner, so you got to get those backyards ready for the ultimate pool party, and they have deals on just about everything. You mentioned this ad, you get $200 off any pool or spa purchase at Family Leisure. Currently 62 degrees, although it feels like 70. The high temperature 79, so I'm guessing that feel like is going to be in the 80s today. Sunshine for the most part. Tomorrow, a little bit more clouds, 87 degrees. And then Saturday and Sunday, we're looking at the mid to upper 80s, 84 Saturday for the projected high, 89 on Sunday. And then we'll open up the new work week on Monday with about a 25% chance of precipitation, some clouds, and some sun before rain rolls into the area. Looks like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, the possibility of rain at this point. The Memphis Tigers will begin their football season week zero. They'll be playing on Saturday, August 29th, on the road at UNLV in Las Vegas. The home opener will be Saturday, September 5th, when they take on Arkansas State at the newly renovated Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. The renovations will be complete by sometime in July. There is going to be so many new amenities to that stadium. I know everybody is fired up. The team, the university, but the fan base mostly, and most importantly, because they're the ones buying the tickets. They're the ones buying the suites. And right now they are going like hotcakes. But it's all over the stadium that you're going to see the difference and hear the difference as well with the ultimate sound system. It won't be coming through the scoreboard anymore. They're going to have two new scoreboards. I thought it was only going to be one, but that's what Dr. Ed Scott said at the Tiger get together. It is just going to be absolutely fantastic. And then, of course, all the beautiful suites. They're doing work on both ends. The tunnel, that's going to allow them to have major events going on aside from football. So I know there's a lot of excitement in town, and I know there's a lot of excitement because of this guy. He is the first-year head football coach of the University of Memphis Tigers. He's Coach Charles Huff. He joins us now on Sports 56 Mornings. You can follow Coach on Twitter at Coach Huff. Good morning, Coach.
Good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
Man, good. We're doing great. Hope you're doing well. We got a lot to get into, and we appreciate your time. First of all, Coach, what did you learn just in general? What did you learn about your team from spring ball when you finally got these guys on the field for the first time after recruiting them?
There's a few things. From a character and disposition standpoint, these guys love football. We didn't have one day this spring where it was kind of like pulling teeth to get the effort out of them, which typically, somewhere in the middle after a good scrimmage, their bodies are sore and, they're a little draggy. We didn't have that. They came out every single day with really good energy and really good effort. I think from a physical standpoint, we're big and we're fast. Now, I say that with limited perspective. The one thing that I don't have that I had at the other two places is a little bit more of an understanding of what the league was like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little bit blind to that. I haven't played in this league. We haven't played a team in this league for 2 or 3 years, so there's a lot of change. So I don't know what there's sometimes you go through a season and certain programs, regardless who the head coach is, who the players are, they have a certain level of toughness or a certain level of discipline. So I don't know that about this conference, but looking at our guys and what I can control, I know we're big and we're fast, which should allow us to play big and fast and aggressive.
With that, when you're putting with so many new guys coming together, that first spring practice for you, like, is it how much of it is for you is assessment of what you've got and who you've got. Like, you went and made a couple of late portal additions, I'm assuming, because you looked and said, oh, maybe we're a little thin here, whatever, versus trying to implement what you're trying to do.
Yeah, well, I think you got to start with implementing your culture and setting the foundation. It's like building a house. If you don't get the groundwork done in the beginning, you can't go back and do it. So you got to do that, because until you set a foundation and establish what's allowed, what's not allowed, what you're going to accept, what's your culture, then you can't really evaluate if the kids can or cannot conform. So I think that's always the first thing. And then you have to really look at, okay, what and who do we have, right? We have these schemes and we have these ideas, but, you know, the whole month of May, we've gone back and said, okay, based on what we know now and about the talent pool, what can we do and what can we build on? You know, we've had to pivot some different ways, not necessarily drastically, but we've had to pivot some different ways because there are things that our guys do better. So we got to spend a little bit more time in that and expand on that side. There were some things that we did that our guys didn't do great, so we got to get rid of that. Mm-hmm. So it's more or less setting your foundation and culture to give the kids a chance to conform to who you want them to be. And then once you do that, then you can say, okay, now I know what they can do. Let's change everything schematically around their abilities.
In a limited amount of time that you get in the spring, 15 practices and off-season workouts and things of that nature, guys doing a lot of stuff on their own. But when you were out there on the field with those guys for those practices and the meetings, do you sense the chemistry already, or does that still need time for that to build?
Well, I think it's, you can sense it, but you can't test it until adversity hits,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
We can all go, you know, to Central Barbecue and sit down and have a great meal, but until somebody's ribs come out not the way they want them, we don't know if they're going to throw them
never,
back at them or
that,
what.
That
right?
Never happens, right. Coach.
So,
there.
Yeah. So, but you have to one, you got to go through something to find out, is it true, connectivity, or is it fake, right? You know, everybody thinks right now they're going to start. Well, the reality is we can only run 11 out there, and it's probably going to be on a kicking unit.
Right.
So the reality of it is we don't know yet, right? You guys haven't written all of your preseason projections, and this person's projected to be this. And, you know, we don't know how all those things affect these young men because they're still 18 to 22-year-olds. So we're trying to make sure we start to set the foundation of what it takes to get through adversity together. We won't be able to test it until we hit adversity. One of the big parts of it will be this summer, right? There's not going to be as much coach-driven focus. It's going to be some player leadership, right? So when you have leadership, who's willing to lead, who's willing to follow. When we get into camp and the temperature here in Tennessee gets a little warmer in those days where you got to grind it through, right, who's willing to do that? And then we're going to have to go into a game, and somebody's going to have to run out there first, right? How do you respond? I would love to say we win every game and nobody scores on us, but they're going to get a first down. They're going to score a touchdown. How do we respond when that happens? We got to go travel together for the first time across the country, right? No one knows what our travel routine is. So how do they respond to that? So that's where a lot of the questions still lie. We've got to do everything we can from a coach's standpoint to kind of work through and teach them those things before it happens, so at least they know how to handle it.
You mentioned with the projections and people haven't done this, there are odds and things that are out there. And just generally in the preseason, when picks and projections come out, do you like it for your team to be projected at the top and be the hunted? Or do you kind of like maybe, hey, they might be overlooking us a little bit, and that's a reason to get a chip on our shoulder?
I think it really, I mean, it's all, as Coach Saban would say, rat poison. but I think it's really the maturity level on your team, and that doesn't always bode to, hey, we got a lot of seniors and we got a lot of juniors. If you've got a team that is immature in that stuff matters, then you have to use it and you have to try to explain how it can cause traps. If you have a mature team, it doesn't matter. You can stay focused on the goal, and we try to create that maturity by letting them know it's going to happen. There's going to come out with all of these rankings, and there's going to come out with all of these projections, but that doesn't mean anything if you don't execute. I think in my past, we've been picked fifth and we've won it. We've been picked first and we damn near came in last. So I've seen it happen on both sides. Now, again, that's an adult speaking. It's going through some things. These kids, their life is driven through Instagram and what someone says about them. So I think as the adults, we have to teach a little bit of life lesson that the only thing that matters is what you do, not what someone says or thinks about you. It's harder to do now because everything is so readily available at their thumbs. But I think you really got to determine the maturity level of your team before you can say you use it, you don't use it, you want to be picked last, you don't want to be picked first, whatever it is.
Memphis Tigers head football coach Charles Huff joining us on the program here on Sports 56 Mornings. I heard you at the end of spring talk about the quarterback battle, and I know you love the quarterback room, but the top two guys that seem to be battling for that starting job, Marcus Stokes, Aaron Nolan, about all the things you need to see from them during the summer, from practice and going out there with receivers, tossing around the ball, getting to practice, or all those other things that they need to do. But the bottom line is going to be when they get out there on the field in August as they continue this battle, because I know you said that, that the job has not been won. When do you expect and when do you hope to have your starting quarterback in your eyes and then maybe announced?
What time is the first game?
First time, I don't know what the time is, but I know it's August 29th.
Okay, well, August 29th, about 30 seconds before kickoff, we'll send out a tweet to the world so everyone can know and feel great about who the star. Honestly, and to me, I've been there, I've been through it, and I get it, right, from a fan perspective, wanting to know. But there's a lot that comes with that decision. One of those guys is not going to be the starter. And that drastically is going to affect his mental disposition. Now,
yes,
that doesn't mean he's
yes.
not going to have to work through the adversity of it, but one of them's not going to be. The team needs to know at some point who that person is, right, because they got to kind of rally behind that person. But we can't make a decision too fast because we don't have all the information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best thing that can happen for either one of them is the fierce competition. It's going to make them better. So we're not kind of trying to play the game of we don't know. We just got to be prepared and have all the information. Like I say, this summer is going to be huge because it's going to really tell me about who they are without a helmet. You know, what type of leader are they? What type of person are they? How do they respond? What do they do in their free time? And then going into camp. Now, we're going into camp with a little shorter window because of playing in week zero. So we'll have to get in a seat sooner. But to me, it doesn't matter if it's 30 seconds before kickoff or 2 weeks before the game. We just got to have all the information, and we got to make sure that we prepare both of them to be the starter and prepare both of them to be ready to be the starter if you're not, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
While you guys have gone through spring and now you're again focusing on everything, trying to get your new team together, a lot of stuff off the field. So where do you stand on the whole college football playoff size, and what is the correct size for you?
Well, let me first acknowledge that my opinion is as low on the totem pole as probably anyone else. I do believe there is arguments for both. I'm a little bit different if you're asking me just my personal standing on the tee box, you and I having fun opinion, I think it should stay at 12. The reason I think it should stay at 12 is because I think there is a sacredness to our game in college football that makes those 12 spots really hard to get to. And I think that's what drives teams in the summer. That's what drives coaches to be better. I get fully understand the value and the resources that created or that are created when you enlarge it to 16 or 24. I get that. I still think our world is in a little bit of everybody wins, everybody gets a trophy mentality.
Yep.
It's not like that. If you want to make the 12, and this is coming from a person who's probably the farthest away from making the 12-team playoff with the way it is now, just because of the parameters.
Mm-hmm.
Win all your games.
Yeah.
They won't keep you out. I promise you they won't. And that's just the reality of it. I mean, and I know that sounds harsh, but the reality is if we go to 24, you're going to have a conversation with me. I'll probably be coaching at Whitehaven High School as the backup running back coach or something by then 10 years from now. And you're going to say, well, should we go to 48? Should we go to 50? Right? Look at college basketball. They're at 64. They just went to 72 or 74. It's going to continue to do that. Now, I am fully aware and I understand the resources and the created value that it creates from a monetary standpoint for these schools.
Mm-hmm.
But remember now, 20 years ago, a computer system picked two teams.
Yeah.
And you went and won the title. Then we went to four games or four teams, right? And we battled it out. There's not going to be a perfect number. Win all your games.
There will always be people complaining.
Stop trying to create avenues for another team. If you're 8-4, you're not a national champion.
Yeah.
It's simple. I don't understand the issue. Now, again, I have zero dog in the fight. But when I was growing up, the national champions were 10-1, 11-0, 12-0, 10-1. Like, it wasn't the 8-4 team who got into the playoffs and got hot. You're not a national champion. That's the playoffs that my son plays in Little League Baseball where everybody makes it and everybody's got a bat.
Man, well, that's refreshing.
And the thing, too, from your perspective, if they go to 24, it's not like it's going to open up a bunch of more spots for the group of six. It's going to be all those other power conference teams that are getting those spots and probably still one group of six.
And trust me, I'm saying this from the seat of a group of six head coach who probably has the hardest opportunity or the hardest lane to make.
Yeah.
When I go in our team room, I don't talk about let's go 8-4 and hope they let us in. Let's win every single day. Let's win every single day. And then make them keep a 12-0 team out.
All right, a couple more things with head coach Charles Huff. I know you're worried about your team. You're worried about wins, and that's what it's all about. But also, of course, to get the product out there, to sell the tickets. I know there's some excitement. What are people saying to you as you meet more people now since you arrived in Memphis about the football team, the excitement, the stadium being renovated? It's going to be absolutely beautiful. Is there a buzz?
Yeah, I think it is, and I think it's a little bit different. I've taken a different approach. I'm asking the fans that I meet, what do I need to do and what do we need to do as a university to get you to the games, right? We've been asking for years and years and years, come to the game. You need to come to the game. Oh, there's a buzz. No, what do we need to do to get you to come? You know, it's obviously there's a limit on what we can do ticket price wise, but if there's a ticket price adjustment that we can do, we'll do it. If we've got to create more avenues for you to get flow into the game, more efficiently, I think the new renovation has done that. If there's more tailgating spots, I think we got to change our approach a little bit if we want to continue to improve our product. We always say, hey, come to the game. You got to come to the game. But we never ask the customer, what do you need to see more of, right? Because once that happens and we're able to do that, now you should be able to come. But right. I think there's a buzz right now that is out there. The new stadium is going to be great. Obviously, this season, there's a lot of anticipation. We've got to play well. I'm not one of these coaches that think if we play like crap, you should come to the game. You shouldn't. I would not go pay to see a bad movie. That doesn't make any sense. But I do think there is a little bit of you have to pay the price for success before the success comes. So we got to get the season ticket sales up. We got to get people coming to the games because what we're trying to do nationally, which is make the move forward to stay in this race of where college football is, we have to be able to show that we have a true, live, living fan base that supports. So it goes both ways. If we want to change our future, we've got to change what we do now. And we're willing to have those conversations about what can we do to make the game and the game day atmosphere and the travel and all that more appealing. Obviously, there's things we can't do. We can't just give away free tickets, right, and say that the stadium's full. But if there are some things we can do, partnering with some groups to get some ticket discounts and all those things, we're open to doing that. But we still need to, once that's done, we got to come.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Coach, you mentioned earlier something about first tee box. I don't know. Do you play golf?
You know what? I've played two times this year, so I am at my max for the yearly rounds of golf that I play. I had to play in one charity golf event, and I'm sure the people that paid to play with me were asking for a refund. And I played a little bit before then to try not to embarrass myself, which did not happen. So I play golf about 3 or 4 times a year, and trust me, I buy more balls from Walmart than I do from golf.com. So you can understand where my shots go.
So what do you do to get away from, like, what is your thing? Like, if you want to clear your head over the summer when you've got, like, I just want to get away from football. What do you do to get away from football?
I don't really have that urge to get away from it. I'm obsessed with it. I do have the urge to make sure I try to give time back to my family in the summer. My 13-year-old, who will be 14 on Monday, is heavy in the AAU circuit. Okay. So I don't get to see a lot of his games, obviously, throughout the year. So in the summer, June and July, you know, they hit the road for their kind of big tournament. So I try to be present for those. Obviously, my wife and I, you know, we see each other every night, but it's literally for, you know, the hour or so that we get. So we try to go in the summer and spend time together. But I don't get away from it. I'm obsessed with it. You know, I think Kobe Bryant said it. You know, if you're obsessed with something, you don't need a break from it. You know, it's just phases you go through. So instead of thinking about third down in June and July, I'm thinking about what do we need to do to get the team more connected, right? Mm-hmm. What do we need to do to eliminate what I've heard about, and again, this is not a knock, but the UAB letdown during the season, right? Like, what do we need to do to eliminate the ebbs and flows? How can I be more connected with the coaches to give them what they want? And then obviously in season, you're thinking about third down and, you know, first down and what, you know, who do we want to attack? But I don't want to get away from it because I love it. Like, I guess that would be the same as like saying you want to get away from your family. Like, I love them. So I know I don't want to get away from it, but I do think there are phases, right? Because obviously you can't be thinking about what's first play of the game going to be, you know, 6 months from now, but you can be thinking about how do you get the players ready to run that first play? How do we get the players ready to be more physically in shape? So that's kind of me. I'm a boring guy, but I love what I do. I think I'm doing what I'm called to do, so I don't ever want to get away from it. But I do try to give back to my family because it's a huge sacrifice to be a family of a head coach, right? I mean, most of the time, these 105 guys see me more than my 4 and 2-year-old because they're usually asleep when I get home. So that's what I try to do as the trade-off for time.
It's a big sacrifice. There's no question about it. So go to GoTigersGo.com. You can find out more information about tickets and things of that nature. Plus, Tigers on Tour, Coach Huff and other coaches are, I guess, 3 more events that'll be coming up. You had the one earlier in the week. Also, as far as the Coach Huff football camps are concerned, that's coming up. You can register and get your kids over there to learn football the proper way. A lot of things happening. I know you're going to reschedule the Fan Fest, do something in August. That still has to be announced. So a lot of things coming up, even during I'm using air quotes here, Coach, the slow time of the year. He is the head coach of the Memphis Tigers. He is Coach Charles Huff. There's a lot of excitement for what is to come starting in 2026. Make sure to follow Coach on Twitter at Coach Huff. Thank you, Coach. Always appreciate it.
Thank you, guys, man. Wish you the best. Have a great week.
You too.
Thank you. Folks, your home, your business, you don't want it to be looking dirty, grimy, and that's what happens, especially over the winter months. A lot of mildew and dirt and stuff just builds up on the exterior of your home, on your driveways and sidewalks and patios and decks and fences, all of that. Well, if you want to get that all cleaned up and looking its best, you need to give a call to Roderick Hall at Hall Power Washing Solutions, or you can go to hallpowerwashingsolutions.com. That's the website where you can go. You can see examples of the great work they do right there on the website. You can also click a link to get a quote right there on the website, or you can just give them a call at 258 258-1399. That's 258-1399. Get your home, get your business looking its best, looking brand new. It, of course, the roofs especially, get a lot of stuff built up on there. You want to make them last longer? Well, get it cleaned off. Get it looking its best as well with the help of Hall Power Washing Solutions. And folks will go years upon years and never think about getting that exterior of their home cleaned up. They'll clean the interior, but they don't think about the exterior. Well, the exterior needs to look its best as well, especially if you have a business. For your customers, you want it looking great. Your parking lot, that type of stuff says a lot when you're taking care of that and it looks its best to your customers. Give a call to Hall Power Washing Solutions, 258-1399, 258-1399, or go to Hall, H-A-L-L, HallPowerWashingSolutions.com.
Steve Zanz from the Golf Channel on NBC scheduled to join us next. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Be sure to download our Hub 901 app for instant access to Sports 56 and all the Flynn broadcasting stations from anywhere. Go to the App Store and get the Hub 901 app today.
Now, back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Good morning!
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 9:30 the time. Final half hour here on this Thursday edition of Sports 56 Mornings. The PGA Championship is off and rolling. And we have the pleasure for, I don't know how many years now, to have the great Steve Sands from the Golf Channel on NBC join us to talk about every one of the majors. And today it's about the PGA Championship. Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I can tell you exactly how many years it's been, Greg.
How many?
I sent that tape to you in 1991 in Salisbury, Maryland. So 1991, we're in 2026. So 35 years I've known you. Oh, you're talking about just being on your show. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the job you didn't offer me.
I know.
When I sent you that tape. That job that, by the way, paid $200 a week that you couldn't find it in your heart to pay me.
35 years of waiting on a phone call. 35 years of waiting on a phone call.
They didn't have phones back then, Eli. It was courier by then.
It was waiting on a carrier pigeon.
Carrier pigeon. That's exactly what it was. A great tape, by the way, from Steve's. For those who haven't heard this story a million times, a great story, a finalist.
You had to keep checking your pigeon to see if it was working correctly.
And a much better position that he would have been if he had taken that job. Who knows what would have happened.
Wait,
he might have been so depressed.
News.
What?
This is breaking news. This is the first time, Eli, I've ever been told that I was actually a finalist for the job.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Of course you were. You were really good.
You were among the top 10.
You didn't send me any nice things. You didn't send me balloons. I had balloons. I had all kinds of gifts from people. I can't believe some of the stuff that people would send for a gig. But
Greg, they didn't even have mail back then. What are you talking about?
No, it was sent.
Well, I couldn't send you balloons. They didn't even have mail.
I'm telling you,
then.
I got balloons.
Pony Express would have got it there.
I got in the horse and me and Eli got in the horse and buggy to Salisbury to get that job.
Again, you were much better off. You know, we had, when did we have Bonnie Bernstein on? Earlier this week? Or last week?
Bonnie was last week.
Yeah, we had Bonnie Bernstein on last week. Of course, Bonnie worked at the station as well. So, yeah, guys, I mean, big names that worked there and big names that didn't quite work there, like Steve Sands, and he's better off for it.
Yeah, listen to me. I got my job. My first start was, Salisbury would have been like Manhattan compared to my first start.
Were you Dakotas or something?
At the time, there were 221 television markets. I'm sure Memphis really wants to hear this. 221 television markets in the country, and I got a job in market 219, Scotts Bluff, Nebraska.
Oh, Nebraska. I was close.
Scotts Bluff,
one of the Dakotas.
Yeah,
Scotts Bluff, man.
Beautiful this time of year.
And they still honor you, don't they? Don't they have Steve Sands Day? You're like the greatest,
right.
The greatest broadcast to ever worked there.
It's been renamed Steve's Bluff.
Yeah, right. It's the Twin Cities to you, Scotts Bluff, Garing, the Twin Cities.
Oh, my gosh. All right, brother. So I hope you're doing well. Hope the family is
doing
well. The PGA, I heard they got a lot of rain last night. I'm looking at the scores. I haven't watched a second of it. Is it conducive to lower scoring? Are the greens more receptive with that rain?
I mean, the rain certainly is going to help the scoring for these guys, the best players in the world. But what's really going to help the scoring guys is the golf course. There's just a lot of scoring opportunities at Aronimink. It's a wide open golf course. When you watch it over the course of the 4 days, There's barely a tree on the golf course, and the fairways are really wide. And when these guys get a hold of their driver and have the opportunity to smack it down there to wide fairways, I just, you know, they're going to be a lot of wedges in their hands, and they're going to be a lot of scoring opportunities. And I think that if you're a gambler, 12.5 under was the total for the winning score. I would bet the house on going better than that.
Right. Because I'm watching it, it looks like the rough, if you do, like you said, the fairways are wide and all that, but if you do get in the rough, this rough looks like it's pretty deep.
It is. It is deep. It's not U.S. Open deep, yeah. But it's pretty close. But the reason, Eli, that the rough is a little bit more up this year than it would be normally at a PGA Championship, which is normally set up, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, it's just set up in more of a U.S. Open light, if you will, if you're a Coors or Coors light person, that kind of thing. The PGA Championship had to have the rough be a little bit nastier this week than normally because the fairways are just so wide. And these guys, I've said this to you before many times, they play the same sport we do, but it's a different game. And if you give these guys a chance to have wide fairways to be able to hit their driver, by the way, most of the bunkering, they're around 290 off the tee per average. Well, that sounds like a lot to us. But to them, they fly it over that. Yeah. So the fairways are wide. They have a chance to have scoring clubs in their hands, meaning wedges, maybe nines and eight irons. And I think the scoring is going to be very low today. Yeah, at least it's also going to be low all week.
Yeah, like you said, make the rough a little bit higher, not U.S. Open rough, but higher than a normal PGA.
Correct.
Because you have to have some line of defense. And I heard when they added all those bunkers, they added a bunch of bunkers, like you said, Steve, they're blowing by it off the tee. So really, it's no line of defense there. It's all about, you know, putting now. I guess it's a putting. They all can bang it. So it's all about making the putt. So
The greens are huge, by the way. There is a little bit of defense on this golf course with the hole locations. But again, Kerry Haig, who does a wonderful job setting up the Ryder Cup when it's in the United States every 4 years and every year at the PGA Championship, Kerry does a great job. And he doesn't want to punish you the way the USGA does. You know, but these greens are huge, and they're really undulating. And because of that, if they really don't like the scoring today and tomorrow, on Saturday and Sunday, they could tuck a few pins in some spots, put them on edges on these greens, and make it more difficult. But I really do think that there's going to be some really good low scores.
So do you think this was a good choice for the site?
That's a great question. There hasn't been a PGA, hasn't been a major championship at Arana Mink since 1962. Now, there's probably a reason for that. But the other thing is when the PGA Championship guys moved to May from August, they took themselves out of the rotation of a lot of courses that they play, like Oakland Hills in outside Detroit, Oak Hill in Rochester, Hazeltine in Minneapolis, because it can be a little dicey up there weather-wise. Now, it could be 80 and sunny in the second week of May, but it could also be 42 with sleet and snow overnight, you know, and you can't have a golf course, you know, you can't host a major championship there. So Arana Mink's good. They've hosted a couple PGA Tour events when they moved from Congressional there when they were hosting major championships. Justin Rose is a winner in 2010. Keegan Bradley beat Justin Rose in a playoff on a Monday morning in 2018. So it's a good golf course. There's no question about that. But for these guys in today's game, they might muscle it a little bit more than the PGA of America would like.
One of the great stories, I'm blown away by the whole Alex Fitzpatrick story of what he's doing.
Yeah.
I mean, it is crazy. You know, you win the tournament with your brother, you think, okay, like, that's great. But, I mean, Matthew kind of helps him get there. What he has done since then, and now he's 2 under today through 13 and a tie for third place. This has been a pretty incredible run that he's on.
Oh, man, big time run. You know, it's amazing, Eli. Like, somebody once said to me, hey, you know, like, Jim Nantz is the greatest, you know, like blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, it's amazing. You know, he's been there since 1986. He's not giving anybody else a chance. If somebody else got a chance, would they be as good as Jim Nantz? I don't know. But they would have the opportunity, and probably you would find some people who would be as good as Jim Nantz, but they just never got that opportunity. Well, if you put that in golf terms, Alex Fitzpatrick He's played all over the world. He won the Indian Open earlier this year. Clearly, he can play at a high, high level. But he was never good enough to make it onto the PGA Tour. Then he wins with his brother at the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. And there's no shame in having a partner to win in. It's the only event of the year that's like that. The weird thing about that event, Eli, is that you get a two-year exemption for that victory, just like you would at any other regular PGA Tour event. The problem with that, most players will tell you, is, wait a second, you can't give a guy a two-year exemption if he didn't win individually. That's not fair. Well, all of a sudden, he gets his opportunity, goes to Doral the next week, ties for ninth. The following week, it's a signature event, by the way, best players in the world. Last week, Quail Hollow, major championship venue, President's Cup venue, signature event, best field you could possibly have in golf, and he almost won the darn thing. He was in the final group on Sunday. So the door opened for him, and he is certainly taking advantage of it. He's not just hot, Eli. He's a good player. I don't mean hot in a good-looking sense. I mean hot in a sports sense. I mean, I guess if you want to say he's hot, I don't care, whatever you want. But he's not, and let's put it this way, he's not just hot. He's not just on a streak. Yeah. He's a very good player. He just never got that door cracked open for him. He earned it. He got it. And now he's taking full advantage of it. Good for him.
Steve, another great story was last weekend with Sneds winning his 10th. Of course, Tennessee, we know him well, the Sneds Tour and all that stuff. And I applaud him. But what about when you have the week when it's the secondary event? Yeah. As you mentioned, Quail Hollow, that's a signature event. Then you have the one in Myrtle, and he wins that one. Do you think he should be getting all those exemptions and everything that goes with that when it's a secondary event?
It's a great question. It's a big debate in golf, very similar to the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. Should you get a two-year exemption for winning with someone, you know, playing with you? Should you get a two-year exemption playing an opposite field event when the best players are playing the same exact week at a different place? I would like to see an opposite field. By the way, I think the opposite field events are going to go away. I don't think they're going to have them, you know, when the new schedule comes out, like in 2028. I just don't think they're going to. They're weird. You know, you already have a big league event. Why are you having another big league event in the same league? Mm-hmm. You know? So I think they're going to maneuver those around and have them be different than what they are now. But having said that, as it stands right now, it's absolutely a PGA Tour win. It's absolutely his 10th victory. And like birthdays and anniversaries, for some reason, fives and zeros mean more. You know, just his 10th doesn't mean any more than his 9th, except it's just a nice round number. It's like a kid turning 10. And he's like, oh, you're in double digits now. You know, like that kind of stuff. The big rub on the PGA Tour with those opposite field events, aside from actually having them, is shouldn't it be a one-year exemption, not a two? You know, a two-year exemption seems like an awfully big gift for winning an opposite field event. Yeah. That is not disparaging the win by Brandt. Right. That is not disparaging the events themselves. They just shouldn't have as much juice, if you will. They don't purse-wise, so why do they have the same exact exemption-wise? It doesn't make any sense.
That's a good point.
Do you see the tour?
By the way, I'm thrilled for Brandt. Excuse me, Eli. Brandt is one of the all-time nice guys in the sport. He's going to be the President's Cup captain.
Right.
Second year in a row, the team captain has won the year of his captaincy. Keegan Bradley did it last year, and Brandt Snedeker. And he's such a great guy. I've known him a long, long time. I couldn't be happier for him. So proud of him. And he grinded his way to that win. Eli, I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm just so happy for Brandt. He's an all-time great guy. And everyone on the tour, all of his peers, are so happy for him. Eli, go ahead.
Do you see the tour coming to, I guess, figuring out a pathway for the guys like John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, that we will see if live eventually, whatever, I don't know what their situation is, what's going to happen to them, but a pathway much like Koepka, or are they going to have to go the Patrick Reed route, or what, getting them back on tour?
I think it's going to be a mix of all of that, but I think it's going to be more punishing. The fact that they allowed that door to open earlier this year, and only Koepka took it. You know, Reed didn't take it. Yeah. Reed went, he's going to take the circuitous route to come back, but he is going to be coming back to the PGA Tour later this year. You know, Brooks was punished pretty good. You know, $5 million. All of it had to go to charity. He picked five different charities. And I don't care how much money you have. You write a $5 million check, that's a lot of money. not allowed to play in the signature events. You know, wasn't allowed to play in some of these events. And Brooks has done the right things, fellas. We were at Doral 2 weeks ago, okay? Signature event just after the Zurich Classic in New Orleans. He was one of the first alternates. Brooks Koepka, a five-time major champion, was an alternate. He sat there all day just in case somebody withdrew and got in the event. A guy of his stature would never, ever do something like that. He then last week played at Myrtle Beach. We talked about the opposite field event. He played last week, not at Quail Hollow where all the stars were on big-time TV. It was at Myrtle Beach where he was. So he's doing all the right things. The other guys, DeChambeau, Rahm, Cam Smith, chose not to do what Brooks did. And I think the players took notice of that. The tour especially took notice of that. And I think that DeChambeau, Rahm, Cam Smith, anybody who wants to come back, those three in particular, Dustin Johnson, those four in particular, when LIV does go away, most likely at the end of 2026, I think their path back will be a much, much rockier road than it was for Koepka when he first came back earlier this year.
Yeah, that makes sense. Before we get your picks for the PGA, one last question from me. What was your take on Furyk being named the Ryder Cup captain?
Well, we all know what's going on with Tiger. Tiger is in rehab, and he is getting his life in order, and we are happy that he is, and he certainly needed it, and we are, you know, hopeful that when he comes back that he is a much healthier human being, let alone being back to being Tiger Woods. Tiger was going to be the captain. He was probably most likely, nothing's 100%, but he was going to be the captain. He was going to accept the captaincy. So they were in a little bit of a bind, and they decided to go with a veteran who's done it before. Jim Furyk's a great guy. Everybody respects him. World-class player, world-class person. He's been a President's Cup captain. He was a Ryder Cup captain in Paris when the United States got smacked around by the Europeans that year in 2018, and he's going to get another go at it. I think they were in a box. You know, do you go with some young guy? You were going to go with Tiger Woods, so no matter who you chose, Greg, it was going to be really difficult.
Right.
But, you know, obviously Phil Mickelson is not available there. They could have gone a little younger, but that would have messed up the order of things. I thought they were going to go Justin Leonard because Leonard is a Ryder Cup hero. He's a major champion, which is the Open, which is over there on that side of the Atlantic. Great guy. Everybody likes Justin Leonard. And he has some Ryder Cup history in 99 when he made that putt. And he had never done it before. But they chose Jim Furyk. For whatever reason, that's the route they took. And, you know, playing second fiddle, Jim will laugh about it. Playing second fiddle to Tiger Woods is nothing to sneeze at. He understands the situation. Everybody in golf understands that it was going to be Tiger, and nobody has a problem with Furyk. I think it was a little bit of a surprise, but nobody has a problem with it.
So you've got, obviously, Scottie Scheffler, who hasn't been winning here recently, some second-place finishes. You've got Matthew Fitzpatrick, who's as hot as anybody. You got Cameron Young, who's as hot as anybody. But who do you like this week?
Well, those three guys are pretty good. I mean, if you give me that trifecta, I wouldn't mind. I chose a couple people. Remember, I said Justin Rose. All right, 45 years of age, playing good golf. Won earlier this year. Never afraid of the moment. Drives the ball beautifully. If the putter can just warm up a little bit, Justin Rose has been first in 2010 at Aronimink and runner-up second. In a playoff on Monday morning to Keegan Bradley in 2018 on this golf course. So I think Justin Rose is going to put himself in the mix. I cannot imagine that Cameron Young does not love this golf course. I think Scotty will play well. I thought Xander Schauffele before the week was starting to round himself into form. I had a long chat with him last week in Charlotte, and he is really feeling good about his game. And then I know this is going to sound crazy. I'm telling you, I think the guy who won last week is going to play well this week and has a great chance to win. Chris Rayton drives the ball like a god and putts the ball like Ben Crenshaw. I'm telling you, that kid can really, really play, and he's on a heater. Do I think he's a great, great player all time? Have no idea. But he is on a heater right now, And I would think Christopher Rayton will play well today and put himself in position over the weekend.
He was, I was so impressed. Nothing seemed to affect him at all.
It was unreal.
He was as calm as it could get.
And Greg, you guys both know this sport very, very well. He did not blink.
No, I'm not saying
he not only didn't blink, which is normally the case. Now, Alex Fitzpatrick blinked a little
bit.
And that's not saying anything bad. It's just the way the sport is. Christopher Rayton not only didn't blink, Greg and Eli, he kept pressing forward and was aggressive and confident and acted like he'd been there. You know, and it was a strong performance, and there's no reason to think that he will not play well in this golf course as well.
He was great. It was a great story with Sneds also winning. It was really a great weekend for golf, and I know we're out of time here, but, man, one of my picks – I just figured with this being a bomber's paradise, DeChambeau already 3 over through 8. DeChambeau's in shambles. I mean, he is. Yeah, he's the opposite way. He's as cold as ice.
He can't do it. He's not in the right space right now.
Yeah, I know.
Well.
I should have never picked
him. Got to get back on that 3D printer and print
him
some
new
clubs.
Did you pick him, Greg?
No, he was just one of my picks. I didn't pick. I love Schauffele. Yeah. He's off to a good start.
Boxing, Greg. Come on.
What? What? Schauffele's good. He's 3 under so far.
No, Schauffele's great. But DeChambeau.
We had a bunch of picks.
I'm just messing with you.
No,
DeChambeau,
I know.
He's not playing well. He also has so much going on in his head.
I'm going to
go to YouTube. I'm not going to go to the tour. Shut up.
I wanted Goddard up later in my picks, but somebody got him right before. And
He would have been a good one.
Yeah, I know. He's a bomber.
In one of my pools, I did put Rayton on one of my teams. I'm hoping you're
right. Rayton's in my pool, too. I'm telling you, Christopher Rayton. I could be dead wrong, but I think Rayton is going to play well. I think he has a good chance to win. I really did. It sounds ridiculous. But I do.
Wow. If he wins, we're calling you up. You're back on Monday. Steve Sands from the Golf Channel on NBC. We'll talk to you again at Shinnecock next month.
You got it. Can't wait. And can't wait to see you guys in August in Memphis. You guys can buy me some barbecue and a few beers.
You got it.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, fellas. Be good.
Appreciate it.
Folks, if you're moving into a new home or maybe a new business location, any move that you've got coming up, whether it's across town or across country, you don't want to be trying to do that all yourself. It's a lot of stress that you just don't need in your life. Get the professionals, get the experts from Black Tie Moving to take care of that for you. Give them a call, 901-316-6196, or go to blacktiemoving.com/Memphis and talk to the experts, the professionals. They'll work with you, coming up with a plan for your move that fits your needs, fits your budget, give you no obligation quote up front, and it's just a first-class experience all the way through with a moving concierge available to answer any questions that may come up throughout the process. They are there to make sure that you don't have that stress and that worry that you have, you know, just there's a lot of things going on when you're moving. Your mind's going in a lot of different directions, making sure you know that your belongings are getting where they're going without any issues, without any problems. That is good peace of mind, and that's exactly what you'll get with the folks at Black Tie Moving. Again, blacktiemoving.com/Memphis or 901-316-6196. Talk to the folks at Black Tie Moving.
Rayton's going to have to pick it up 2 over through 9 to start the PGA Championship. We'll come back. We're going to tell you about the winners and losers from the NBA Draft Combine, according to SB Nation. Interesting list. We'll do that when we return to wrap things up. This is Sports 56 Mornings with Greg and Eli on Real Sports Talk, Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Let Bryant Dacus and Brett Norsworthy take you home every afternoon. Sports Time on Sports 56. Weekdays from 3 to 6 here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Sports 56 Mornings.
Morning!
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again, Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy.
Welcome back, everyone. 9:54 is the time. We thank Steve Sands for joining us on the program. We thank Coach Charles Huff. By the way, we'll have Coach Huff's interview up on the website under featured audio, so you can check it out at your leisure. This is a story from Ricky O'Donnell from SB Nation, who's covered the NBA and the NBA draft for years. I respect the guy. But it's only one guy's opinion. And I'm not going to go through all the details, but just very briefly, because we don't have a lot of time, these are his winners and losers from the NBA draft combine in Chicago. Loser, Tyler Tanner, who may go back to Vanderbilt, and that's going to make Vanderbilt that much better. Loser, Koa Peet. Winner, Jacoby Gillespie out of the University of Tennessee. Winner, Cam Carr. I know Cam Carr is turning some heads, Eli.
Yeah, a lot of people believe that he has moved himself up, certainly up the draft board. He's a guy that a lot of people talked about at possibly at 16 for the Grizzlies. Most people believe he will not be there at 16 anymore, that's for sure.
Winner, Hannes Steinbach. Also a winner, guy we've talked about before, Chris Senak Jr. out of Houston. Loser, Kingston Flemings. Interesting. Flemings measured at 6'2 and a half barefoot, 6'3 and a half wingspan. Pretty tiny for an NBA point guard, according to O'Donnell. Also, winner, Ademora. How's his first name pronounced?
Ade.
Okay, Ademora, who I absolutely love. He is a winner. 7'3 barefoot, 260 pounds, 7'6 wingspan, 9'9 standing reach. I think he's a guy who teams got to really consider earlier in the first round than he's projected right now. Winner, Cam Boozer. And loser, Keaton Wagler. So those are some of the winners and losers from Ricky O'Donnell at SB Nation. Doesn't mean that they're, and again, none of them are losers, right? Even those going back to college, those staying in the draft, those guys are all going to be drafted. One day the others will be drafted. Still, they're making big money in college, and they're going to make big money in the NBA. So I don't know how you could say a loser, but I know exactly what he's talking about as far as guys and the expectations going into the draft combine and coming out of the draft combine. Steven Yeager, your leader right now at the PGA Championship at 4 under par. Bud Cauley at 3 under par as they play round one of the second major of the PGA Tour season from Aronimink, and that's just outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. That's going to do it for us today. I want to thank Kerry Miller, Charles Huff, Steve Sands for joining us on the program. Tomorrow, John Varlas on preps. Ed DeRosa will break down the Preakness Stakes, which will take place on Saturday from Laurel Racetrack in Maryland. Joe DeLeon at 8:25 to talk all things college football, NFL. Kenny Mayne from ESPN Sports Center. Of course, he's no longer there, but was there for many, many years. Kenny Mayne at 9:30. We got 10 in a row. The game show that has swept the nation. So a full guest slate for you tomorrow on the program. Should be a lot of fun. Waldo and Friends on Sports 56 is coming up next. For Eli Savoy, for Jay Ham, I'm Greg Gaston. Have a great day, everybody.